Hello, I'm Handel Scantlebury. This is number 0509, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0509. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, cartoonist Dan Pereiro, creator of Bizarro. Dan doesn't mind that you might share his work on the internet. Just don't change it.
People decide that they have a funnier punchline, so they take the entire cartoon and just white out all of the words and type in their own typically lame idea or someone else's name, and then they put that out on the internet, and then that goes around the world a million times, and people think that was my comic because it's still got my name and copyright and stuff all over it, and it's got someone else's words. That's annoying. The other thing that's annoying is when someone takes my work and just chops all my name and the legal stuff off of it because they like the joke, and they pass it all around the internet. Now, why would you even do that when it's completely fine and legal to just share it without changing it?
Dr. Anne Andrew, author of What They Don't Teach You in Prenatal Class, talks about raising kids who can avoid suicidal thoughts. Part of the answer is to understand that children are egocentric creatures.
When we're born, and for the first few years, we're trying to make sense of the world around us. And we assume that whatever happens is because we've caused it to happen, because we have an egocentric phase. And so we make up beliefs about ourselves that are simply not true as a way of trying to explain what's happening. So, you know, if my parents are telling me, you make me so happy, and then one day they're not happy, I must have done something to cause that. And therefore I must be bad, or I must be a failure, or I'm not good enough.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Remember that big planned Uber strike a couple of weeks ago? What did Peter think of it?
It didn't happen. It was a waste of time. There's no, and they pull a stunt for years in the New York City taxi industry. There is no association. There is no union. And people come forward and they say that they're the representative. So I'm going to announce it now. I'm the representative of all taxi drivers all over the world. I mean, it's just nonsense. Anyway, it turned out to be a big fake, fraud, and phony, as is Uber.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news. And, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0509 was my brother-in-law, Handel Scantlebury. Thank you very much, Handel, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success, such as new patrons like Jerry Bradley in Calgary, Alberta. Thank you very much, Jerry, for joining us here on the Stuff File program. Join us at patreon.com and help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And Jerry, it's much appreciated that you've joined the fold. Thank you very, very much. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, police in Laredo, Texas were summoned to a residence after a woman allegedly punched her common-law husband. The victim explained to police what happened to set off 20-year-old Lizeth Guadalupe Ramirez. While they were at the movies, she had asked him if she looked pretty. He told police that he didn't answer because he couldn't hear the question over the loud movie. She insisted that they leave, and she punched him repeatedly as he drove home. Ramirez was charged with assault and family violence. You know, I wonder how pretty she'll feel about her looks when she's wearing orange and white stripes. Also, what would happen if she asked that typical throw-yourself-on-a-grenade question? You know the one. Do I look fat in these jeans? A wrong answer to that one will get you a frying pan to the back of the head. You know, as that last story demonstrates, nobody likes to be in an argument or fighting with their spouse when they're driving. You want to concentrate on the road while your spouse sits beside you quietly, like this next story. An Arizona police officer who pulled over an Oklahoma man driving on Interstate 10 got more than he bargained for when he spotted the man's dead wife in the passenger seat. 70-year-old Rodney Puckett told the officer that his wife, 74-year-old Linda Puckett, had died at a Texas hotel earlier in their trip. He told police that he put her body in the passenger seat to continue on their destination. Police arrested Rodney Puckett on suspicion of abandonment or concealment of a body. Well, I don't know how this is abandonment or concealment. She was literally right there, riding shotgun. Detectives are working with Texas authorities to investigate Linda Puckett's death. The couple had been in the process of divorcing. Well, that explains it. That, and he still wanted to use the carpool lane. According to the Arapahoe County, Colorado Sheriff's Office, 29-year-old Paul Sikkema exchanged explicit online messages with a sheriff's deputy posing as a 14-year-old girl named Jenny. Sikkema was arrested and held on $7,500 bond on suspicion of internet luring of a child. Normally, I don't share to catch a predator type stories because I don't want to give those who prey on children any attention. But this story is a case of sad irony because of Sikkema's job. He is a graduate and an instructor for the U.S. Air Force Academy. He works in the philosophy department. He teaches ethics. Oh, dear Lord. They really do need to tighten up their recruitment standards. Yikes. A police officer in Haines City, Florida, was inside a local business on May the 4th when he heard a loud noise outside. In the parking lot, he found 68-year-old Gary Wayne Anderson. And there's that middle name Wayne again. Anyway, Gary had just crashed his riding lawnmower with trailer carrying a red cooler into the officer's cruiser. "Bleep it, I'm drunk," Anderson told officers. "Take me to jail." He was so intoxicated that he failed a field sobriety test and almost fell to the ground multiple times. At the police station, Anderson accused police of poisoning him and requested that he be taken to hospital, where test results found his blood alcohol content to be three times Florida's legal limit. Anderson has two prior DUI convictions and has not had a valid driver's license since 1978. "It's never a good idea to get behind the wheel drunk," noted Police Chief Jim Olensky, "even if that wheel is a Craftsman, Massey Ferguson, or John Deere." Well, can't argue that point. When you're drunk on a riding lawnmower, there's no telling how many people you can mow down. And you know, if he goes to prison, he's an excellent candidate for the prison grounds crew. Anyway, we have one more Stuff File News item here in this first section of the Stuff File News before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program. In the wee hours of the morning, a man was shot in the buttocks in a neighborhood of Orlando, Florida. His injuries were not life-threatening. He was taken to hospital for treatment. Police said no arrests have been made. There is no known motive for the shooting, and the investigation is ongoing. So, basically, what the cops are saying is that some guy got shot in the ass, but they have no crack in the case. Okay, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It's been a while since we last had a chance to talk to Dan Pereiro, the man behind the excellent comic strip Bizarro. We last spoke to him back in 2011, so I thought this would be a good time to catch up. Dan also has an excellent blog called, aptly enough, Bizarro Blog. Dan joins us on the line right now from Mexico. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So, first of all, I understand congratulations are in order. I saw your blog. You recently got married.
I did, yes. That is true. A week ago.
Congratulations, sir.
Thanks very much.
Now,
yeah, it's, go ahead.
You've been in Mexico for a while. How did you end up in Mexico? You live there now, right?
I do. I live here permanently, yeah. Many years ago, I met a Bizarro fan who had retired. He and his wife, he was a college professor, and he and his wife had retired in Guatemala. And they invited me to come visit them, and I did, and it was awesome. I had a terrific time, and I got to know them very well over the years, and So I had a very good idea of what it would be like to live outside the United States. And then when I met my now wife about 6 years ago, she had always wanted to live outside the United States too, and I had been thinking about it. So, and she said, "Hey, I love this town in Mexico. Let's go visit." And we visited it, and we loved it. And a year later, we came back and bought a house and just moved.
Well, again, congratulations. Now, the last time we spoke, as I said, it was back in 2011. I guess it was around the time you were starting to do more things like blogging and doing stuff online. How has that gone for you in the last, 7 or 8 years since we last spoke?
Well, it's, I have a love-hate relationship with social media, which I guess is not untypical of my generation, but I do as much social media as I feel like I have to promote what I'm, to promote my stuff and the sort of, because I do like being in contact with fans. I actually really love that part. I love email. I love that people can comment and just, and chat me up and ask me questions. And I'm very accessible. I always try to answer the same day if anybody ever shoots me any kind of a comment or question, if I see it. But I don't like spending a lot of time online, so I sometimes miss a certain number of comments and questions that way. So like I say, it's a love-hate relationship, but it's how things work these days, We've opened up a shop. We have a shop at bizarro.com. You can go to, what is it called? I guess it's Bizarro Shop. I guess Google Bizarro Shop and you'll find my shop. And we have a bunch of stuff that we've designed that we think is fun. And by we, I mean, it's basically me and my wife and my adult daughters, and we kind of get together, and I mostly design the stuff, but they all have great ideas. And so we come up with stuff that we put out there. And that's been kind of fun. It's a way to kind of keep things going beyond the newspaper syndication world, which is, of course, less strong than it used to be. I enjoy it. I like writing, and so I use that. I use my blog every week to sort of catch people up on what's going on in my life or what I'm thinking about the cartoons and stuff. And it's been a lot of fun.
You mentioned a love-hate relationship with the online world that you live in. Isn't it even more of a love-hate relationship, not just based on your age, but on your profession? I know, for instance, there's a lot of other cartoonists out there, Gary Larson's one of them, who hates the idea of people sharing information and sharing work because it kind of affects the copyright. It's, gone are the days where you had a favorite Bizarro comic and you had it in the newspaper and you maybe made a copy of it and showed it to a friend. But now people can just send this stuff all over the place. Does it somehow dilute your brand?
To a degree, it does. Yeah, it's an impossible thing to control. I mean, that's there's no way to put that toothpaste back in the tube, But yeah, the thing that distresses me the most, I don't mind people sharing my comics on Facebook and stuff, as long as they don't change them or edit them. And that's what is the most disturbing to cartoonists like me, is that people decide that they have a funnier punchline. So they put they'll take the entire cartoon and just white out all of the words and type in their own typically lame idea or someone else's name. And then they put that out on the internet. And then that goes around the world a million times. And people think that was my comic because it's still got my name and copyright and stuff all over it. And it's got someone else's words. That's annoying. The other thing that's annoying is when someone takes my work and just chops all my name and the legal stuff off of it because they like the joke and they pass it all around the internet. Now, why would you even do that when it's completely fine and legal to just share it without changing it? That kind of stuff, of course, it's maddening for cartoonists. Our stuff gets, and it's so easy these days to electronically manipulate an image to the point where it really can't, you can't even, the average person can't tell that it's been manipulated. So they don't even know that it's not really your work, or they see a cartoon that they really love and they have no idea whose it is because the name is gone. So there's that trick, that's a tough one. I'm constantly chasing people down on the internet. People send me stuff and go, "This guy changed your work." And then I go and complain. And if they take it down, fine. If they don't, I have to report it to Facebook and then they take it down. It's just like a big, that's like a whole nother part-time job is trying to chase that stuff around. So there's only so much of it you can do.
Also, being a cartoonist is by nature kind of a solitary job. As you mentioned earlier, you love to interact with your fans, with the possibility nowadays with social media that you can really interact with your fans, how has that in any way, shape, or form affected your work?
You know, I suppose it has really affected. I mean, it affects me emotionally because I enjoy it. You know, it's just like that's a fun part of the job. The first 20 years I was doing this, there was no internet. And not 20 years, like 10 years I was doing it, there was no internet. And occasionally I'd get a letter by mail from a fan. But these days, of course, you get a lot of immediate feedback. And it immediately makes you more conscious of something that information that I didn't used to have even have access to, and that is which jokes are really, like, which cartoons are really popular and hitting a chord with people, and which ones are just falling flat. And you didn't used to be able to know that, and now you know it pretty quickly, but just based on the likes and comments and things that you're getting. And so it kind of, you know, it does inform my, it doesn't help me write jokes, but it helps me write better jokes, I think. Sometimes I'll write a gag and just think, yeah, this one's, based on what I know about my audience, this one's not going to hit a lot of chords. But, or this one is going to hit it out of the park. Like, this is going to be huge. I know my fans well enough now to know that they're going to love this gag. So it kind of, you know, changes that for sure.
We currently live in a both more politically correct time and also a charged political climate. Has that affected your work?
To some degree, of course, it always does. Political correctness, here we go into a whole nother love-hate thing. Political correctness is nothing more than encouraging each other in a society or community to be more polite and thoughtful of each other. And that's never a bad thing. To enforce it with the kind of zeal that often occurs is kind of the enemy of humor. Political correctness is the enemy of humor in many ways, because it reduces the number of things that you can mention or get, you know, or make fun of or get a laugh out of. Like, suddenly it's not fair, it's not okay anymore to make fun of these 250 different categories of people. And if you even mention them in a cartoon, even if the cartoon is not about them or they are not the butt of the joke, they will complain because they're used to being made fun of. So it becomes a much more contentious job. I don't mind going out of my way not to offend people, but when there's a perfectly harmless joke that or when there's a joke that is that's good natured, but you can't use it because you're not allowed to mention this group or that group anymore in any kind of a way that isn't absolutely glowing, you know. So, like, it does, you know, it does kind of, it's a bit of a wet blanket on humor, but I don't know, it's probably a necessary evil. It's better than living in a Trumpian world where everybody just shouts insults at each other and whoever wins gets to keep everything and everyone else is out of luck, you know. Like, I certainly don't want to live in an utterly non-PC world, that's for sure, so. Here we are. I guess it's a necessary evil.
Well, looking back at your long career, if you were to look back at some of the work you did early when you started or in the first part of your career, how would you say either your style or your jokes have evolved or how you've evolved while doing Bizarro?
Oh, man. You don't have time for that answer, but... just because a person, I've been doing this for a joke a day for 33 years. And when you, like, over a period of time, anybody changes a lot. I've changed a lot. My drawing style has changed. My concept of what a punchline is have changed. I look at some of my early work and I just can't even believe it was ever published. I'm so embarrassed by it. I guess a lot of artists feel that way. We're perhaps more critical of ourselves than anyone else is of us. But I look at my early work and I over time I've learned sort of more economy. I've learned how to get to a joke quicker and more simply. I've learned how to draw quicker more to the point in ways that make, I've learned how to compose a cartoon in ways that make it funnier. So it's all that sort of stuff all figures in. And then I look back, talk about the PC thing. I look back at cartoons from 30 years ago, and like, you know, it's a handful of them where I'm just totally making fun of overweight people. That's not cool anymore. You can't do that anymore. And I'm not saying I miss those jokes. They weren't good jokes in the first place. But they certainly, but it wasn't on my radar back then. That wasn't a non-PC thing to do. So, you know, it's a perfect example of one of the things that's no longer cool. But like I say, it's not like I walk around making jokes about overweight people. You know, that was actually a sort of an ill-informed, immature choice in the first place. So I'm glad that I don't do those anymore. But yeah, man, my cartoons have changed so much over the years that I hardly even recognize the really early ones.
Well, they have changed, but they are still very, very funny, and I'm sure your fans appreciate it immensely, and also more so, they appreciate the fact that you continue to do them. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is bizarro.com. Dan, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Hey, thank you. And I want to throw in 10-second pitch here. I have another website called DiegoPerraro.com, which is the name that I'm painting under in Mexico. I have a whole career as a fine art painter now, too. So that's a fun thing for my Bizarro fans to look into, I think.
DiegoPerraro.com.
That's it.
Great. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Peter. It was a pleasure.
Dan Perraro, of Bizarro Comics fame. Again, you can check out his website at bizarro.com, where you can see his work and also sign up for his weekly newsletter. And as you heard him mention, you can check out his fine arts site as well, which is diegoperraro.com. There, you'll be able to find his watercolors, oils, and drawings that you can purchase prints of. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0509, and you'll find links to Dan's pages. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, coming to you from Montreal, Canada, where we share the longest unprotected border in the world with the United States. Take that as a sign of extreme friendship or a warning.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of What They Don't Teach in Prenatal Class as we talk about raising teens to avoid suicidal tendencies. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. Authorities in Georgia said a child opened a Lego box purchased from a consignment store and found $40,000 worth of meth inside instead of plastic bricks. The Bullock County Sheriff's Office said three women told investigators they purchased the box, which was labeled as containing Lego toys, at a consignment shop in Charleston, South Carolina, and brought it back to Statesboro, where they gave it to the young child. Sheriff's investigator Jim Riggs said the child opened the box and discovered a large bag of methamphetamine. The sheriff's office said they believe the meth had been hidden inside the box by drug distributors and mailed to an empty or abandoned address. Investigators said postal workers will sometimes not deliver to addresses dubbed vacant, and the unclaimed packages will later be auctioned off. They said that was likely how the box ended up for sale at a consignment shop. Well, this would make an interesting plot development for the next Lego movie. I mean, you know, they've done Batman and they've done Star Wars, but they've never done Scarface. Yeah. In 2010, Rick Flory, a former police sergeant in Queensland, Australia, reported to the Police Crime and Misconduct Commission that a female officer performed a sex act on a male colleague in a marked patrol car. Flory later sued three supervisors, claiming he suffered reprisal for his report when he should have been protected by the Whistleblowers Protection Act. But a judge had ruled against Flory, saying that the law didn't apply because the sexual act in question is not sufficient, in my view, to raise misconduct to a level of official misconduct defined in the law. The Australian Associated Press summarized the ruling by saying the decision comes as a major blow to Flory's lawsuit. Well, that was an unfortunate turn of phrase by the Associated Press. They might as well have just simply said the decision sucks, but I digress. Well, it was just last month in Stuff File News that we reported on sweat bees found to be living in the eye of a woman in Taiwan. Well, bugs in living bodies seems to be a recurring theme. Here's the latest incarnation. Doctors in a hospital in Yangzhou, China, found a small spider building a nest inside a man's ear. The man, identified only as Lee, arrived at the hospital complaining for discomfort in his ear. Doctors said the spider was too small and too fast to be caught with tools, but they were able to flush it out using water. You know, perhaps it's time for everyone listening to go and check out what might be living inside them. This is like every hypochondriac film buff's nightmare. Like when you're watching Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan, and that bug comes out of Chekhov's ear. Or in Alien, where the creature bursts out of John Hurt's chest. Sweet dreams, y'all. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the concept of playing basketball in the buff has landed a Florida man a three-point shot behind bars. Cops arrested 29-year-old Jordan Anderson after finding him allegedly playing buck-naked basketball at the Candyland Park in Longwood, Florida. Authorities from the Longwood Police Department say Anderson reportedly told them he was working on improving his basketball game and that practicing while in the buff enhances his skill level. According to an arrest report, a park employee called 911 after spotting Anderson bare butt and with his basketball. Cops asked the naked man to put his clothing back on, to which he complied. Anderson was charged with indecent exposure of sexual organs and later thrown in jail with bail set at $500. Well, this is a story that certainly brings new meaning to the basketball term ball handler. I hope he only practices this way and doesn't want to play a game in the buff. Nobody needs a face full of Anderson when he goes for a layup shot. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Suicide prevention is often ineffective with its focus on symptoms of impending suicide. Meanwhile, negative beliefs that lead to depression and suicide get started very early in childhood. Author and educator Dr. Ann Andrew says a better idea is to focus on the cause of suicidal thinking, self-loathing. It is a result of negative beliefs children pick up between birth and age 8 at a time when kids are self-centered. Anne is the author of What They Don't Teach in Prenatal Class, The Key to Raising Trouble-Free Kids and Teens, and she joins us on the line via Skype from Vancouver. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks very much for being on the program with us.
You're welcome.
Now, what I find interesting in the quote of you have is the idea of being aware of the fact that children are self-loathing at that age, or not self-loathing, but self-centered at that age.
Right. So when we're born, and for the first few years, we're trying to make sense of the world around us. And we assume that whatever happens is because we've caused it to happen. And that's just because we have an egocentric phase. And so we make up beliefs about ourselves that are simply not true as a way of trying to explain what's happening. So, you know, if my parents are telling me, you make me so happy, and then one day they're not happy, I must have done something to cause that. and therefore I must be bad, or I must be a failure, or I'm not good enough.
Now, just the idea that we're talking about suicide prevention is proof that there are numbers out there that shows that this is a growing concern. And what I want to know from your estimation is, do you believe that the rise in suicide is because of the world we are raising children in today, or the way we are raising children today? Or is it a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. But what I think is really important for parents to be aware of is that children are taking on these negative beliefs, and that they do, in fact, drive self-loathing, because these beliefs get stronger over time. And the fact of the matter is that parents have these negative beliefs as well. And so they're parenting with these, and that makes them not such great parents, actually. So I can give you an example from actually that. Well, the reason that I wrote my book was because I wish I had read this book before I even had children. The day after my daughter was born, she was given a bath, and I looked at her, and in my mind, I saw her as an Olympic swimmer because she was enjoying the bath so much. But what that actually meant was that there's something wrong with my thinking, that I needed her somehow to complete me, because I have a negative belief that I'm worthless, and so I need my children to then provide my worth for me. And that puts strain on them. So my book really helps parents to become aware of their own negative beliefs, to heal those, and then become much more effective parents for their children. But if they're also aware that their children are picking up these negative beliefs, they can challenge them over time. I work as a Choose Again circle facilitator with a lot of adults, and what I see at every circle is that all of us are dealing with our little traumas, and little and big traumas from childhood, and these actually choose our feelings for us, so that the feelings that we feel regularly on a daily basis are replays of incidents from childhood. And so that we can actually find out what those beliefs are based on our feelings, because the feelings link to memories rather easily.
So it sounds like what you want people to do is to break what seems to be natural patterns. If we feel some way because of the way we're raised as children, and we have insecurities of our own, we overcompensate or try to push those same insecurities, maybe unwittingly, onto our children.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So we have to do our own work in order to be effective parents for our children.
I guess the very first thing one has to be as a parent is to be, first of all, extremely self-aware of one's own psyche.
That's right. Yeah.
That's easy to say, sometimes difficult to do.
Right. And but what I was able to discover through the experience of having a daughter who was a troubled teenager, and that's why I wrote the book, well, I was led to a very effective technique for finding and healing these negative beliefs. And that's what I teach parents to do and help them to help their children with. And as I say, it's a process of looking at our everyday upsets, feeling what it is that we're feeling in them and linking them to early memories, and then recognizing that we made those beliefs up at a very early age when we didn't really understand what was going on, and they were never true. I have an example from my own life where as a 4 or 5 year old, I was taken on a wonderful holiday with my parents, and we went to on a boat called the Hispaniola to Treasure Island. And when my brother and I were digging in the sand for some gold coins that we were told were there, three pirates jumped out of the bushes and pointed their guns at us. And I threw my hands in the air and then realized that everyone on the beach was laughing. No one else had their hands up, and everyone was laughing at me. And so I tried to hide behind my mum, put my head in her skirts, And I made up at that moment that I was stupid. How could I have been so stupid as to think that those pirates were real? And as a result of that, I'm stupid became a very stubborn negative belief of mine. And it had quite an impact in my life in that I would try and get more and more degrees in order to prove that I wasn't stupid. And then it kind of made a very stressful life for me and also led to chronic depression. And so when I started doing this work, I actually rather quickly was able to heal what had been a chronic depression. And so when I was able to do that, I realized that this is something that everybody should be able to do in order to overcome depression, which of course is one of the factors leading to suicide.
So you said that this happened when you were five, right?
Around about that time, yeah.
And as I said in the introduction, when I mentioned the age groups between birth and age and age eight, it seems that the die is cast very early.
Yeah. Psychologists say, I think that our characters formed by the time we're 8 years old. And basically we've made up our identity based on these negative beliefs that we've picked up from whatever experiences we've had.
Now, using your own experience, did you have an aha moment with that situation with the pirate, in that you were always aware of it, or were you aware of it later on and how it affected you?
I only became aware of it after I started doing this work, in that I was able to, I recognized that I would frequently feel acutely embarrassed, and I could take that feeling back to the earliest time I felt it, and it was on that beach with these pirates. And then I realized, oh gosh, that's when I made up this belief that I was stupid, because you kind of look around in the memory, what did I make up about myself at that time? And then I could see that the pattern of jumping through hoops started at that time, and it actually resolved a lot of stress for me. I no longer had to keep jumping through hoops. So I could see that impact. And I had other examples of how I was able to actually change a behavior that I needed to change. I used to yell when I was a little girl at my parents. And then, of course, when I got older, I would be yelling at my kids once in a while. And that's not a very loving parenting technique at all. So that needed to change. And I found out that what caused me to yell was any time that I perceived someone wasn't listening to me. And it went back to a memory of my mother ignoring me when I was trying to get her attention. In fact, my mother had been completely deaf when I was very young. So that feeling of frustration was quite familiar from that. But when I was able to realize that I'd made up that I must be worthless, otherwise my mother would listen to me. And the antidote really was to have a complete understanding that my worth is a done deal. It's inherent. And when I really got that idea, the yelling stopped completely. And I'd been trying for years and years, and willpower just didn't work. But the minute I got that it was this feeling of worthlessness and that my worth is inherent, that really is the antidote to all of the negative beliefs. And that's what I teach in my book, is that what we really need to do in order to challenge these negative beliefs that children are picking up is make sure that they understand that they have inherent worth.
It's a fascinating.
And there's a number of ways of doing that.
It's a fascinating topic indeed, and there's so much we can talk about, but unfortunately we're out of time. The book is What They Don't Teach in Prenatal Class, The Key to Raising Trouble-Free Kids and Teens. Dr. Ann Andrew, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Ann Andrew, author of What They Don't Teach in Prenatal Class, The Key to Raising Trouble-Free Kids and Teens. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0509, and you'll find links to Ann's page and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, is indeed on the line with us from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to New York City.
Now, as usual, we go to your website at gabby.com to see what's happening, what's shaking, what's news in your fair city. But there's an item that I didn't see on your website. I assume it's now gone by since a little time has passed. But I know there was a couple of weeks ago you were touting the story about the alleged Uber strike that was supposed to take place around the world. Now that it's behind us, your thoughts?
It didn't happen. It was a waste of time. There's no, and they pull a stunt for years in the New York City taxi industry. There is no association. There is no union. And people come forward and they say that they're the representative. So I'm going to announce it now. I'm the representative of all taxi drivers all over the world. I mean, it's just nonsense. Anyway, it turned out to be a big fake fraud and phony, as is Uber. Now, keep in mind, Uber is nothing more than a brand name. It's that whole business of the Uber-type people. They're used car salesmen. I think I may have explained once before, and I'll explain it again to you how it works. You want to drive a New York City cab, you go into a garage, you take a cab, you work at it, and you give part of the money to the owner of the cab. You don't have any investment. You don't have to lay out any money. You don't have to maintain the car. You don't have to take care of the car. That's it. You do your work. You do your 12 hours. The job is done. The swindle with Uber is that you got to go out and buy a car. Who do you think is going to sell you the car? Uber sells you the car. So they're making a bundle on selling the cars. According to a study that was just done by MIT, one of our big fancy schmancy universities, the average Uber driver is making $3 an hour. I mean, it's just unbelievably outrageous. And the reason it exists is because bums like de Blasio, that's our mayor, by the way, permitted Uber to move into New York City with 65,000 vehicles. Unbelievable. So they try to have a feeble strike, but it was crushed very quickly by Uber and the authorities, and the taxi drivers are all starving to death. And by the way, so far this year, 8 cab drivers in New York City have committed suicide. Sorry to be so blunt, folks, but that's the story.
You mentioned your mayor. He's now running for president of the United States?
Yeah, this is God's way of getting even with the United States for all its transitions. I mean, it's just, the guy is an idiot. He really is.
So I take it you're not voting for de Blasio?
No, I'm not voting. And as a matter of fact, if you look at all of the Democratic candidates, and that doesn't mean that I'm a Republican, they are so unbelievably bad, so unbelievably stupid. And the people in Canada north of us, which you have your listeners, among other places, are all going to pay the price if one of those idiots get in.
Well, let's move to happier stories then. Judith Clark is out of prison.
Well, that doesn't make the cops happy. She was involved in the killing of police officers, I think it was like 37 years ago, and she's been in the slammer. The parole board, which I think is made up of 3 people, decided to give her a parole after 37 years. You can argue whether she should or she shouldn't, put that aside. The fact of the matter is the police departments in the state of New York have gone ballistic over it. Even the New York City Police Department, and it wasn't one of their cops, it was a cop from Rockland County, two cops or three from Rockland County. So they're all hysterical. And, of course, she's going to live now in Manhattan, where she's already established in an apartment someplace, which they're trying to keep secret because somebody's going to whack her. I mean, there's just so much anger floating around, it's unbelievable.
And for those who aren't aware, we should mention, Judith Clark was the driver in a botched Brinks robbery in which three police officers were killed. And she spent 38 years in prison because of it. It was a robbery back in 1981.
Yeah, and I'm fair enough to understand that that's not the same person who did the murders, I'm sure. She's probably changed. She's probably a different person. She's expressed regret. It's a new person. So do you keep on punishing and punishing and punishing her? That's an argument you can have for years and years and years. Does the punishment ever end, or doesn't it ever end? But as far as the cops are concerned, the cops aren't being very forgiving about it. They're not looking at it and saying, oh, well, you know. And certainly their families, because they're survivors of the cops' families who are fit to be tied. It's one of those really touchy things. It seems that lately the only controversies we end up with in the States are controversies that can't have solutions, because I'm sure most of your nice listeners know all about the abortion business. It's the same thing. How do you answer whether you do it, whether you don't do it? These are very complex problems. And even I, who's filled with all kinds of wisdom, can't give you the answers.
And to wrap up the whole situation on Judith Clark, we should mention the fact that she initially got, if I'm not mistaken, a 99-year sentence, and that was commuted by your governor.
Yeah, well, he did that because he's running for president and he wants publicity. And what they do in a situation like that is they sit down and they figure how would most people want him to vote, and whichever way it comes out, that's what he does. So he must have done a survey. He must have found that most people were in agreement with her getting a parole, so that's the way he's going, because he wants to say, oh, see what I did when I was governor, now will you elect me president?
And speaking of correction facilities, I understand six correctional officers have been charged with conducting an illegal strip search, or strip searches.
Yeah, well, that's more like a Woody Allen story. See, you know, all the news I've given you so far has been kind of glum. This one, at least, is funny. Because, it's not funny, but it's funny, I guess. It turns out that the guards, some of the guards at Rikers Island, when they were checking the women visitors, it's not prisoners. The visitors, they were a little bit free with where they put their hands. They did a little too much searching. And so now these guys are going to lose their job and probably go to jail for fiddling with the fiddles, which they shouldn't have done. But as I say, it has a certain element of humor in it, I think.
Mm. Meanwhile, speaking of correctional facilities, you're not necessarily unfamiliar with these places.
No, I've spent some time in the slammer.
Do tell.
In my youth.
Do tell.
No, I'm not going to tell. I want everybody to wonder if I was a serial killer or not.
Oh, okay.
I've been in jail four times.
Four?
Yeah, and you know what I learned?
What did you learn?
Crime doesn't pay.
Ah, okay.
No, actually, they were, before everybody gets too nervous, nothing was criminal. I mean, there was other things like a fight or some, you know, contempt of court, something, but not for any criminal act. My record is clean that way. The only criminals in the United States at the present time are in the FBI. If you want criminals, that's where you'll find them.
Oh, dear. Okay, and moving right along, I understand that New York City has just ended the lifespan of plastic bags.
Yeah, the plastic bags are out. That's all the more reason people should take a tour with me, because everybody who takes a tour with me gets a canvas bag that says Gabby Cabby on it. So isn't that neat? And I think I have a picture of it on the website. No, I've been a longer proponent. The plastic bags are terrible.
So tell us about these canvas bags that you have at the website. This is the first time hearing of this.
It's a canvas bag that says Gabby Cabby for the environment. And when I give somebody a tour, I always like to give them a bag that they can use and keep while they're in New York City. And I guess I just did a commercial for myself. But it's not new. Getting rid of plastic bags is not new stuff for me. I've done that for years.
How long have you had these Gabby Cabby bags?
At least 10, 15 years.
This is the first time hearing of this.
Well, because, I mean, I don't want to turn my nice chats with you into a complete interview, I mean, or should say a commercial, so I never really mentioned it. But if anybody wants to see what one looks like, go to the website and take a look at it.
Now, I know your wife is very crafty. Did she have a hand in designing these?
Yes, absolutely.
Ah.
She has a hand in everything.
Ah.
She's my leader.
And because I know you've mentioned in the past some of the things your wife does, I figure since we're mentioning the canvas bags, we should mention what your better half is capable of.
Well, she's capable of running a very nice blog, which is all about her recipes and her cooking. She's a wonderful sewer. She's all around. And she's also a cutie pie.
And a lovely...
I guess I married her either for her cooking or the fact that she's a cutie pie. I don't remember which.
How many years now have you two been together?
47.
47 years. Mazel tov.
Just one of those short Hollywood romances.
And if anybody wants to check out the bags that you just mentioned, again, you can go to Peter's website at Gabby.com. If anybody wants to drop him a line, they can send him an email to Peter@Gabby.com. And don't forget those tours that he gives out of the city of New York. If you're ever in New York, it behooves you to dip into your pockets a little bit and take one of Peter's full tours. You will not regret it. And, as you just heard, you get a canvas bag.
Yeah, that's right. And I'd like to apologize just a little bit for being so pissy with this conversation. But I got to tell you something. The way things are going in the United States, well, with the abortion business, with the war in the Middle East maybe, with the people running for presidency, this place is going nuts, and we're all going to go nuts. I just hope I'll be the last one to go nuts.
Well, at the very least, if anybody goes to New York, they can get the canvas bag. Peter,
that's right. And on the tour, I'm very nice and sweet. I'm not pissy.
Peter, thank you very much for taking the time to
you
be on the program with
sweetheart.
Us. Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I've got more Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day coming your way here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, around 9 a.m., Millbrook, Alabama police received a call from a woman who reported a burglary in progress at her home, except there was no burglary. What appeared to be a routine burglary call turned out to be a failed attempt by 33-year-old Amber Lewis to use police to spook her husband, who she believed was having an extramarital affair. The ruse backfired. Besides charging Lewis with making a false report to law enforcement, officers located what appeared to be marijuana, cocaine, and other drugs throughout the house, including in the couple's 5-year-old child's bedroom. As a result, Lewis has also been charged with second-degree possession of marijuana and chemical endangerment of a child. Said Millbrook Police Chief P.K. Johnson, "Your guess is as good as mine. She knew her husband was engaged in an extramarital affair and called the police on her husband and told us it was a burglary. What her goal was, I have no idea. Bottom line, you lie to the police, you go to jail." Johnson was particularly irate at the false report because at the same time, firefighters were responding to a fire at a local school. Upon arrival at the home in response to the burglary call, police encountered Lewis and another yet-to-be-identified woman. Both said they did not know who was inside the house. After officers entered the house, they encountered a pervasive odor of marijuana but found no suspect. Only after they secured the property did the officers determine the suspect to be Lewis's husband and the report to be false. Johnson said both the husband and the woman who was on the scene with Lewis will also face charges, the husband for the drugs found and the woman for also telling police she didn't know who was inside the house. Said Johnson, "Let this be a notice to anyone considering filing a false complaint like this. If you waste our resources like these people did, then you can expect to be placed under arrest as well." I'm just going out on a limb and say that this marriage is now officially over. Yeah. You know how overly excited you can get when you're near a celebrity you idolize or are around their personal items? Well, German Chancellor Angela Merkel's government plane has been grounded by an excited fan who jumped out of her van to take a photo of the plane at Dortmund Airport, but forgot to put the parking brake on, and the vehicle rolled slowly into the nose of the jet. Germany's Spiegel Online posted a picture of the low-speed collision with the Global 5000 jet and reported that the van driver was an employee of the airport. The German Air Force confirmed in a tweet that Merkel returned to Berlin by helicopter after her plane was damaged by a vehicle. I guess that van driver can forget about that autographed picture of Merkel, and there's no chance of a selfie now. Anyway, boys and girls, let's get to the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
I've noticed of late a social media pattern that magnifies the idiot in people. This is just the latest. The city of Edmonton is home to one less person. Jesse Dean Kowalchuk has been transported back to Kamloops, BC from Edmonton to face a judge for three charges of breach of probation stemming from three separate files in 2015. Last December, Kowalchuk saw his photo being circulated by Kamloops media outlet CFJC Today as part of a weekly Most Wanted segment. He then sent a direct message on Facebook to CFJC Today. "Newsflash, morons! I'm in Edmonton and I'm not coming back." The tone of his message was very derogatory, stating that the RCMP had missed the ball because he had been living in Edmonton for 3 years. After the RCMP became aware of Kowalchuk's Facebook post, it requested the BC Prosecution Service extend his three outstanding warrants to Alberta. On May the 10th, he was arrested by Alberta police, remanded, and sent back to Kamloops. Now, why, oh why, would you taunt the police in a different province on Facebook and not expect the authorities to track you down and drag you back home for a prosecution? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0509. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0509. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. The Stuff File reminds you never try to drown your sorrows. Don't just learn to swim anyway.